Welcome back to another FACT podcast. I'm Dr. Fred Clary, founder of Functional Analysis Chiropractic Technique, a chiropractic technique based on movement and breathing. On tonight's episode, we have an interesting interview and conversation again with Dr. Luke Staub, a Nebraska chiropractic specialist. Doc is going to talk to us about using sports psychology as an approach to general psychology in life, success, business, family life. We got talking about this weekend. I gave a seminar in Wisconsin, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And we were just talking about, you know, why is the current psychology, general clinical psychology, so focused on normalizing, you know, your past pathological behaviors, as opposed to normalizing success, normalizing the struggle toward winning, being number one, being the best you can be, a psychology of excellence. So if you look at psychology, you'll see this, if you really study it and tear it apart, you know, you'll see two diverging paths where, you know, they try to, and some people really need this, they try to, you know, placate to, all right, you know, no matter what happened to you, it's not your fault, you can't do anything about it. And it's, you know, let's look at the, it's someone else's fault. It's your environment. It's who abused you. It's this. And this is not to downplay. I want to be very careful about this podcast. It's not to downplay. And I actually say this during the interview. People who had some type of abuse, some type of trauma, we're not talking about that. We're not trying to downplay that. But the idea that there's a way of overcoming, there's a way of looking at your past mistakes, your personal past mistakes, not what was done to you, and trying to improve yourself. That's the really the goals of sports psychology, is to increase the performance of athletes in the social cultural setting of athletics. So we're going to jump into that and kind of take a different look at, you know, can you apply these concepts that are already accepted in the psychological community and apply them to your life? It's already being done in big business, CEOs everywhere spending thousands of dollars on weekend seminars so they can improve their big, their medium size, or their small businesses. And all those concepts come from the field or subspecialty of sports psychology. And me and Dr. Luke, having been successful elite athletes, we're just going to apply. It's like, look, we were coached this way. This is what is mainstream right now in professional athletics, collegiate athletics, and even in most high school athletics. This is what you consider mainstream. The concepts of goal setting, honest, true feedback or coaching. Hey, you messed up this way. Move your foot, move your hand. This is how you improve this physical sports maneuver, performance, skill. And to make it well, you have to continue to do it. You did screw up. Take ownership of it and let's improve it. And if you keep improving it and doing the work, getting the work ethic, you're going to improve your score at the end of the game, at the end of the meet. Now, we all call that common sense, that the harder you work at something, the better you will be. Me and Dr. Luke do talk about in this interview how this is veered off, and especially with the pandemic, a lot of acceptance of mediocrity, being mediocre. And that if you couldn't perform, oh, that's okay, you know, join the crowd. Well, we don't want people to be part of the crowd. We want people to be the best they can be. So without further ado, enjoy the interview. Well, we want to welcome Dr. Luke Staub back to the podcast. Tonight, it's a late Monday night. I saw a bazillion patients, a little tired. I'm sure he's worn out. But we want to talk about something that is near and dear to both our hearts, and that's sports psychology. So people hear the word sports psychology. What does that mean? Well, normal psychology is looking at human behavior, its interaction with others and the environment and society, and trying to normalize behavior. Where sports psychology, the definition is working with athletes to optimize their performance, either through goal setting, working on confidence, and working on how they work with a team. And that includes working with parents and coaches. Sports psychology is a subset of psychology, and it is totally accepted. It's mainstream. And what me and Dr. Luke are going to talk about tonight is basically why aren't we applying the concepts of sports psychology to everything in life? So we want to welcome Dr. Luke to the show. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm kind of like you, a little on the tired side. It was a long day, but really excited to be back on the show.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So I'm going to start off with just reading some definitions so at least we get that out of the way. According to the American Psychological Association, sports psychology is a proficiency that uses psychological knowledge and skills to address optimal performance and well-being of athletes, developmental and social aspects of sports participation, and systemic issues associated with sports settings and organizations. Now, that's a lot of gobbledygook, but basically it's trying to make an athlete the best they can be by working on what's between their ears, goal setting, confidence. What do you do when you fail and you lose? How can you learn from that? And like we were talking before the show a little bit, you know, I'm like, why don't we apply this to all things in life? Because normal psychology tries to normalize all your losses in life, all your abuses, all your traumas. Well, this bad thing happened to you, so you don't have to be successful. And I know I'm going to get tomatoes thrown at me. You know, this bad thing happened to you, so we can talk about it all the time so you feel okay with it. You're never going to feel okay with abuse. You're never going to feel okay with trauma. So why aren't we applying the concepts of sports psychology to your life? Hey, this bad thing happened to you. How can we get over it? How can we learn from that mistake? I can't dribble right. I can't throw the free throw correctly. I can't do the balance beam correctly. What do I need to change in my physical and mental behavior to be more successful? What amazing concept, as opposed to saying normalizing, you know, bad thoughts and bad behavior. So you can go ahead and chime in, Dr. Luke. How do you think we should apply sports psychology to normal everyday life?
Well, I'm going to go back one thing you said. Okay. When we, like, there are certain things in life that you know, you can't get over, but there's a, you know, instead of being like, well, you need to get over it, work on minimalizing it where it's not a big picture. I mean, some people are like, well, you know, there's trauma or there's this or that. And some things in life, yeah, you might not be able to forget, or like when we say get over, but there's things you could minimalize to where they don't have that giant impact in your life. And then you go to sports psychology of, you know, goal setting, stuff like that. You're starting to see a lot more, especially higher CEOs, start to see more goal setting, a little more sports psychology with their staff. Yeah. You're starting to see some of it come around. But I think we don't push it far enough because it's a level of comfort for people because, you know, you're hitting status quo and stay status quo because we're all here in this status on the same level that way. But if you're an athlete, whether it be high school, whether it be college, I mean, pro, my career was done in college. But when you're taking that and you want to be that starter and you want to be the all conference, you know, all American, and you want those accolades, you don't stop at status quo ever. Mm. You, instead of going to the bar, you set the bar. And if someone's beating you, I mean, I always talk about competition, and I tell like my athletes, I said, especially in the off season, I said, look, I want you to find a place in the game where someone, you know, where someone got the better of you, or you feel like you just couldn't like handle, you held your own for the most part, but you didn't really like handle and really just, you know, do your best. And you felt like there was a guy who was better than you. Well, you got to realize in the offseason, he's going to improve his game. So not only do you have to improve your game yourself, you got to reach his game and you got to work harder. And a lot of times when life, you know, we're like, well, we got to work harder, we'll start making excuses up. But, you know, if you really look at those excuses, oh, that's all they are. There's really not a lot of substance behind it. It's a lot of smoke without a lot of substance at all.
Yeah, what's really interesting, and I want to be really careful, and I want to be sensitive to those people that have a lot of trauma, physical, sexual abuse. It's horrible. Right. And we're not trying to belittle that.
No.
What we're trying to say is, at least I want to say, is that, you know, if you got a C on your math test, well, you did the best you could. And that attitude is... will never get you anywhere in sports. No. You know, I guarantee everyone right now is studying how Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl. Well, oh, yeah. They got a new quarterback. The guy's 40 years old. He got another receiver. And I'm like, yeah, he had an okay year. If you look at his statistics, he was a good quarterback.
Right.
And I'm like, what was the difference? And I want to submit to you that it was sports psychology. I mean, I had a friend who's in Tampa Bay, and he told me about, he's close to the team. He's a Cairo. And he basically told me that what he did, the quarterback, is he texts every single one of those guys during that Super Bowl week personally, 55 players. He made sure he contacted them or called them. Are you kidding me? You know, you talk about you got your leader and you want to go out and party, whatever. And he's like, you got this, dog. You know, we're going to stay focused. Don't get off your game. You can party after they blow the whistle. I mean, you talk about that. How did that change their performance? You know, how did that change things of how they see him, see the environment? And more importantly, and this is big, how they see themselves. Because when you get to that level of the NFL, I don't know if anyone knows this, what's it, less than 1% or 1% of high school kids will ever make it to the NFL? It's tiny. It's a tiny percentage. Well, you think about that, so they're all pretty good. You know, when you get to the NFL, every one of those players is pretty good. Guess what? He got just that attitude, that leadership, changed how they thought about themselves inside, and all of a sudden their identity is no, we're a winner. I'm a Super Bowl champion. I'm a Super Bowl champion, and I'm going to play like it, and I'm going to talk like it, and I'm going to act like it.
Right. No, and it's little things, you know, you take outside the sports realm. You can do that you have an office. Say you're the business owner. Mm-hmm. You have employees. Just by talking to your employees and say, instead of like, you need to do this, you change everything to we, and you turn everything into a team setting. And just by those little things, you're like, look, I'm noticed. My boss notices me. We're part of this. We're pulling this together. You know, I mean, how many people tell their employees, hey, thanks for working today. I'll see you tomorrow.
Wow.
Just that little thing. I've had the same employee now. She's been with me for 9 years. I don't think there's a night that I haven't told her good night. Thanks for working today. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Every time I close.
Yeah.
I want that person to know how important they are to me and how important they are to the business. And if you're part of that team, like, I mean, you think about it, you're third string, whatever on the team. And you're like, look, it doesn't matter. Okay. Tom Brady texts you, your quarterback texts you and goes, hey man, I just want you to know, we got this. I got your back. I'm glad you're on our team. Whatever you think you were about to do that may not have benefited the team is gone. Cause you're like, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm pulling my weight. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing extra reps. I'm making sure I'm at the meeting 5 minutes earlier. Cause I mean, dude, he took the time out of his day to text me. And when you have that kind of leadership, you have so much more cohesion. And when you have that kind of cohesion, your productivity in your office, your business, and your life explodes.
They've taken what I've seen in the literature. They've taken a lot of these sports psychology concepts and they put it into business. So a lot of your big business leaders, they just follow the team concept. You know, a rising tide raises all the boats. They take that concept that we're all in this together. It's not a dictatorship. Even though the CEO runs everything and it is, it doesn't matter. The players think that they matter. I mean, if you're the third string You're on special teams, maybe if someone gets a hurt ankle. But if when you're put into that third quarter of that Super Bowl game, if you don't perform, that's a touchdown for the other team.
Right.
You got to perform for those three plays that you were in for that Super Bowl. You better be on your game. And to have a leader that makes the person who gets 60 snaps as opposed to three, do the same thing. Oh, my goodness. It blows my mind that we're not applying that to parenting. We're not applying that to the education system. We go into, we go into schools now and, it's okay. Do your best. You did your best. Well, I'm sorry. The main thing about sports psychology I personally like is its truthfulness. Right. If you're, I'm a power lifter, so that, I did do football and track and field. I threw shot and discus, and they were constantly improving it. But in power lifting, which is most immediate to my memory, when you're doing something that your form's slightly off, my teammates will say, hey, Fred, you didn't sit back right, or that foot was turned out the wrong way, or you didn't get your elbow under the bar. And that constant feedback, they didn't blow it off and said, you did the best you could. No, I didn't. I didn't have my form right. I wasn't focused. I didn't have the technique. And that's why it sucked. So now when I go back, I'm thinking, okay, what do I need to do? What are my cues? What's the discipline? What's the form I got to use? And then I have a better performance because the coaching, the outside assessment was honest, as opposed to, I hate to say it, more of this laid back, I don't want to use a political word like liberal, but we'll use that in the general sense that you're more liberal, that all you're doing the best you can. That's where they are. And what I get upset is, how do you know where that person is?
Right.
You have no idea until they really fail when they're trying their best. I'll take someone who's never Levi the other day, Dr. Levi. And I'm like, let's put a shirt on you and see if he can bench 400. Let's do 450. Let's do five. And, everyone was shocked. I'm like, I knew he could do it because right. He could hold the form. He could do all that. It wasn't my confidence in him that made it work. It was the fact that we gave the environment to, if you're going to fail, fail big.
Right.
And I think people were I failed big. You failed big.
Oh, yeah.
being an athlete and even in business and life. Why are we teaching our kids, our children, hell, the whole society with this pandemic that we need to be scared? It's almost like weakness is a virtue.
So I'm going to pull a quote from a guy, you may have heard of him, Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He has this thing called Tesla. He just quoted something the other day and it fits in with us really well. And he said, what if you took your 10-year goals and you tried to do them in 6 months?
Oh, wow.
There's a high, really almost guaranteed you're going to fail. But yes. How much farther along are you going to be?
Oh, wow. That's big.
And I was like, oh, there it is. And I think part of it, and then I listened to Ed Milet, who's a billionaire entrepreneur. And he talks about, and this is kind of the same thing I have, it's that you get feedback, but you got to realize you got to take the negative feedback along with the positive praise.
Yes.
You got to quit blowing smoke up people and give them like, look, you did all right, but we can make you better. And here's how. And if the delivery and how they tell you it's better, you don't like it, that's fine. But don't like Ed talked about, he goes, I want to give people feedback. And they're like, no, you can't talk to me like that. I don't want to hear feedback like that. And I'm like, dude, this guy's got billions in his bank account. You may want to listen to that. Like, you got to take coaching the good and the bad. And a lot of coaches get to the point where like, well, I can't tell them that, he's off on his read step for a linebacker because okay. then he'll get mental about it. And I'm like, from a young age, you got to learn that losing is not a bad thing. It's not the end of the world. And there's always something to take away from the loss, but you can do, and you can find good things in a loss too, but the same thing with a win. You can find great things. You can do all these great things with a win, but it never hurts to find a couple things you can improve on. You always want to have, I don't want to be obsessed with and don't celebrate the victory, but when you go back, see if there's a couple things in business wise, okay, we did this marketing scheme. It worked really well. We had a big feedback. Is there anything we could tweak it to even make it more effective? Because just because it works doesn't mean you can't tweak it to be a little more effective in life. And, you know, the more effective you are in life, in business and everything else, the more you can accomplish. And, you know, I don't want to say rewards because I don't want everything based on rewards, but usually the bigger the reward.
No, I agree. And sports psychology is based on rewards, more wins, more accolades, better performance. Hey, I was second string. I'm moving up. Like, my 14-year-old, she was like, she didn't want to do the freshman volleyball team. And I'm like, Callie, it's okay. You're going to be the best player on the freshman volleyball team. If you go to JV, there's 10th and 11th graders there. You're not going to get any playing time. Guess who never got off the court? She did. Guess who got best defensive, best? I mean, she got all these awards. She was their best player. And of course, I'm biased. It's, you know, my kid. But she got the awards from the coach saying best player.
Right.
And she's like, well, you know, what am I going to do next year? And I go, varsity. Because you had so much playing time, you're ready to just go in a little bit in 10th grade in varsity. If right. That's what you want to do. You know, you'll run the JV team, but maybe you're ready for varsity now because you need some leadership and you need skills. But the main thing is that you need it to be knocked off your horse a little bit and not make varsity, not make JV. Now, she could have made JV. And they kind of gave her a choice. And she says, no, I'll stick with this team. Well, she never got off the court, did very well. And guess who was the leader there? You know, right. Kids that barely played, she'd give them coordination. And that builds character, that coaching and all that stuff. That's not taught every day. Like, you know, we have safe spaces now. You know, if someone's upset emotionally, give them a puppy dog. And where sports psychology would say, oh, no, it, you know, you can cry about it. But what do I need to change to be better so we can win?
Right.
We can win and do better. And if I win, if I'm a better player and a better leader and you know, a better coach, if I put that all together, our team will do better and we'll have more fun. You know, you think about, you know, families, you know, you see these, you know, parents breaking apart or kids not getting along. And it's like, why are we applying this? How can you be a better, you know, husband, a better father, a better lover, a better friend to everyone in your family? What do you have to do? And you set goals and then you practice. Imagine that. Practice where you work on your weaknesses and, you know, you don't work on your strengths. You say, okay, what I need, you know what? I'm not good at communication with my wife. I'm going to write down, you know what? I'm going to practice this week. I'm going to come and say, dear, how was your day? And then shut up and listen. I mean, could you imagine the changes? My wife's got, you know, a baby under one arm, a toddler on her leg, and the five-year-old upstairs crying. And it's like, I come home and I want dinner. How about I bring home dinner every other day and I do the dishes every day? Oh, my goodness. Right. You know, you won't understand how happy your spouse will be. But you have to practice that. Well, I don't want to do that. Well, if you don't want to do that, you're no different than these snowflakes that want safe spaces and want participation awards. You know, it makes no sense.
We don't keep score anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and that way everybody wins. Everybody goes happy. But in reality, in life, you know, that's not how life goes. You're going to get hit in the face. You're going to get knocked to the ground. You need the coping mechanisms, whether it be through sports or through something, to realize that it's not the end of the world. You got to take a breath, pull yourself back up, and whatever you were doing didn't go the right way. Work on finding it different or practice what you're doing to improve how to do it and then come back at it. I mean, sometimes you're going to get knocked down, but this concept that, you know, well, you never get knocked down and everybody's good and your best is good enough. How do you know your best is actually your best until someone pushes you? How do you know your best is, well, this is the best I could. You know, you talk about lifting and you got players who are like, you know, you get football players, stuff like that. They're like, well, they're trying their best. Well, what if we push them a little bit? What if we tweak a few things? Can their best be better? I mean, I don't like when people are like, well, you know, that's the best they got. No, it's not. If it's not I don't want to shoot for perfect. I want to shoot for excellence, which means you have a very small amount of error in a long version of time is my version of excellence. And it always bothers me because, you know, people are like, well, you know, they're doing their best. How do you know? What if we change coaches? What if we change the teammate? What if we change their workout program? Can we get more out of them? you know.
Can you unpack that? I want to pause you for a minute, Doc, because I think what you said was the most profound thing of the night, is that you don't shoot for perfection, you shoot for excellence. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Right. Well, if you always shoot for perfection, you're guaranteed to fail, and you're like, well, I
Oh,
made a mistake.
that's right.
And then, you know, there's not a perfect time to move. There's not a perfect time to open a business. Everybody waits for that perfect thing. You know,
Gotcha.
you shoot for the best was what is my opinion. But I mean, excellence is something that's achievable. It's attainable. You are able to run at a high excellent, which is, you know, a high efficiency. No one's able to run perfect. People are going to make mistakes. And if you expect everybody to be perfect, then you're setting everybody up around you to be to fail, because the second they make one error, okay, you're failed, you're out, you're done.
Wow, that's good. That's really good. I also want to look at the other side of it, where the issue with participation awards, where everyone does good for participation. There's another side to that coin. The other side of the coin is like you said, when someone fails or they get third or second or fifth. And you say that's the best they could be. That's all I could do. I could only took this class in college, or this is the only job I could really go. And it's like, well, who gave you those limitations?
Right.
Are we putting artificial limitations on our kids, on society, on business, on our athletes, based on because we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings? Because the cool thing I like about sports psychology, if we play it totally out, is the belief that at any time, any team can beat another team under the right circumstances. I could play the Super Bowl champions, and if they're having a bad day and we're having our best day, we're going to kick their ass. And it has to be that concept that if I keep working toward excellence, anyone can win on a given Sunday. And that's the way it is in life. When people said, oh, I've been divorced, or I lost this business, or no one loves me, or I hate to say it, you're born poor and you didn't have the resources, didn't go to the right school, didn't have the right friends. So you keep working on what you have. And like I said, on any good given Sunday, you can end up the winner if you don't give up.
Right. Well, look at the March Madness bracket. I mean, it's
Yes.
shattered. You got Ohio State losing, Chicago Loyola beating Illinois. I mean, you tell me that those guys aren't coming in. There's not a doubt in their mind that they're going to lose, these underdog teams, because everybody's like, yeah. And everybody makes excuses. Well, they have these small conferences and they haven't played a lot of people and they don't have the size or the speed. And then they come into the March Madness and they blow these big teams
Yep.
out that have the big conference. That's all sports psychology. And my aggravation is, and I think part of it is, for some reason, competitive natures make people uncomfortable. But I mean, if you took that competitive edge and you drop it in a business and you view it as that, I mean, you'll go. But I mean, that's a big part of sports psychology is you want to be competitive. You know, you want to set the bar. You want to be the guy who you took third last year, you get one more ground and you win it all, and you beat the guys that stomped you last year, because your competitive nature wouldn't let you be complacent where you are. And the thing about complacency is you have to take the competitive edge out of it, then you can get complacency. But good sports teams, I mean, you look at, I like to use Tom Brady. I mean, he's 43. The guy, he's competitive. He likes to set the bar. It's not in likes. He loves to set the bar, but he doesn't do it just on the field. I mean, he has an off the field routine. He does it with his family. I mean, he even talks about spending time with his kids, spending time with his wife. Like, he breaks it up. So it's not just so obsessed with it that that's all you do and you lose sight of everything else. You want that balance. But if you have that competitive edge that I want to be the best dad I can be possible, I want to be the best husband I can be possible, the best chiropractor I can be possible, I want to grow a business, and everybody's like, well, businesses around here only grow this big. I don't care. Don't put that limitation. But if you listen to the people who are like, you can't do this, you're only made to hear, I think the best job would be for you to work at McDonald's. Who gave you this permission to stop and be complacent? There's nothing wrong with being competitive. And if it makes somebody else uncomfortable, so be it.
It not only does it make them uncomfortable, I mean, and we could talk a little bit about it because we have time. There's almost like a toxic jealousy factor. Like, I always tell my kids, it's okay to reach down and help your friends up. That's being a good friend. Give the shirt off your back, help them up. But be careful. And they're like, why be careful, Papa? And I said, when someone's spinning and they're going down the toilet and they raise their hand up and they want someone to like lift them out, you think they want them to lift it out. Sometimes they want to pull you down with them. Right. They want you to be stuck in the same mindset. You know, see, I told you couldn't do it. You want to go to college to New York or Paris. See, well, you've been feeling them. You're filling their ears with BS and saying, oh, go to the community college, when that person could have gone to Harvard or Yale.
Right.
If they tried, if they busted their butt and made that a priority, like you would in sports psychology. Oh no, all my friends are going to the community college. I'll go with them. Okay.
I know.
If you tell yourself you can't do it, you're right. And here's the cool thing with sports psychology. If you focus and do the work, if you tell yourself you can, you will with time. Right. Eventually it'll happen. You know, eventually it will happen. And it's amazing. You know, I like to talk about, you know, that limits. And one of my favorite example is Frank Reich of the Buffalo right. Bills. He was the backup quarterback for a while now. He's been a coach forever, but he was backup. And I think it was like the 90 AFC championship. They were playing the Houston Oilers, which team doesn't exist anymore, but they were down by 5 touchdowns at halftime. It's the greatest comeback in NFL playoff history. And the Buffalo Bills, their main quarterback got nailed, you know, and was hurt. So they bring in Frank Reich, who hasn't done a snap in 3 years, you know, and he brings them back and they win the game. They ask Frank Reich, how the hell did you guys come back? And said, I said, because you had to have the defense working too. And he goes, how did you convince the whole team that they could win? And he goes, this is our game. We're at home. You know, I never thought that we would lose. But when you looked at the score and saw it 35-0, how did you do that? And he goes, because I knew we could do 38. And he said, in that psychology, you know, he came in the huddle, everyone's scared. And he goes, all right, let's get the first touchdown. We need to get it done in 3 minutes. And then he gets back in the huddle and said, guys, we got to get this touchdown in 2 minutes. Can you imagine the boldness of saying that in the huddle?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we only have about 3 minutes to get this touchdown. And again, can you imagine when he first came in, they interviewed him about it, or he wrote a book. That's what I read. And he wrote a book about it. And he's like, the first time in the huddle, they laughed at him. They kind of giggled. It's like, yeah, we're just here for the commercial breaks now. And he goes, nope, we got 3 minutes. We'll get a touchdown. And his one receiver, BB, heard him. He's a famous guy. Mm-hmm. And he caught touchdown. And then BB came in and goes, okay, how long we got, Frank? We got about 2.5 because they had the ball a long time. We got to get a touchdown in 2.5 minutes. And could you imagine, by the time they got in there, they had seconds to go to get in field goal range. And they go, Frank, what do we need? He goes, we got to get 30 yards in 3 plays. And they said, okay, break. You know, can you imagine that psychology? Why aren't we applying that to life? Like, you have the husband, oh, my wife hates me. Okay, you got 6 months to make her fall absolutely in love with you. What do you have to do? My business is failing. Okay, who can you talk to, and what do you have to do in the next 6 months to make it better? My kids don't respect me. You hear that all the time. Oh. All right, in the next 6 months, how can you change your parenting to make yourself indispensable to them? No one talks about that.
No.
Oh, get them in counseling. Oh, you know, you're doing the best you can. That's just kids nowadays. Instead of saying, what can you do better? Where sports psychology said, okay, you fell down, you dropped the ball. What can we learn from it?
Oh yeah. No, it applies to everything. And you bring up that game, that level of confidence of like, everybody's like, well, I'm behind the 8 ball and I'm behind and I can't make it up. And I'm like, why? Who told you you can't come from behind in victory? Who told you that you can't win it? Well, you know, the chips are down. I mean, again, I like Tom Brady. Years ago, when he's down to, he would see how far down were they to the Falcons? What, 28 points, something like
that? Yeah, it was 28 points. Yeah.
I mean, you talk about a guy who's like, all right, we're gonna go get it done. I mean, and And everybody's like, okay, he said we were going to do it, so we're going to do it. All it takes is one other person to believe with you.
One.
And, I mean, it just takes
55.
One.
55.
You know, and it goes, like, go to business and say, yeah, you have your strong points, you have your weak points. And if the reason you're failing in business is because you have weaknesses and you have a short term time to turn it around, it's not unheard of to go get coaching.
Yes.
Either work on your weaknesses or bring someone in who that's their strength and work with them and help build that business and, you know, build a team setting. So many people have to think that they have to go it alone. That's the other thing. A sports psychologist, everybody's like, well, everybody has a team. There's no rule that says you can't have a team. You can get a team of husbands together and talk about what they can do to improve their house life.
Yes.
You know, hey, what do you, I like how your kids really respect you. What do you do different? You know, do you have this? Hey man, you and your wife seem like you've been married for like, you know, you've been married for 20 years, but it still looks like you're on your honeymoon. What are you doing?
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with having those conversations, you know, and vice versa. But so many people are like, well, I'm on my own. You don't have to be an island. I don't know where we get it in our heads that every man's an island. No, every man's a continent. There's a lot of people around it. So you might as well live together and use each other. You don't have to go to counseling. Find some people who, you know, you get along with. And if here's the thing, if you're with a group of people and everybody's having trouble with their marriage, you might want to find a different group of people because you're just perpetuating the cycle and down the toilet you go, just like you were talking earlier.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, you know, my grandma said it, and you've heard this before. You lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas. And I'd go, Grandma, what does that mean? And she means you got to be careful of your friends and your company. And right. I say, I like my friends. I said, there's a difference between like and going to jail for them. And I'm like, what do you mean, Grandma? And they said, you have to be careful because their likes, their attitudes, their behaviors become yours. We are social animals. So if you hang around winners, guess what? You're going to win. The one thing about the pandemic that I hate is it's made weakness a virtue, as opposed to on CNN, MSNBC, and all the mainstream media, we should be saying, okay, this 80-year-old grandma got COVID and she beat it in 3 days. What did she do? Oh, she eats organic and she sleeps and she gardens and she takes 2-mile walk every day. Why aren't we seeing that instead of saying, oh, you know, this died? Why aren't we studying the winners? In sports psychology, they study winners. No right. one's studying the 28th team in the NFL right now. They're studying Tampa Bay, you know?
And in sports, you don't want to be part of the losing team. And if you can't fix the culture, you leave. I mean, you want to be drawn towards the winners. You go towards the winners, which I mean, and you see it, some people with business, but I don't understand why more of us don't either want to be the winners or get drawn more towards the winners. The thing that bothers me is we have this, like you talked about, we almost have this affliction to people who, you know, can I have the victim stuff going on or just don't have, and I'll get tomatoes thrown at me for that one too. But that's the thing is, it's like, it's not that I don't have sympathy for what people are going through or for the issues that they have, but why aren't we looking how to beat this faster? Why aren't we looking at the people who, the 99% who have beat this thing, the people who are in the risk categories and they're kicking the crap out of the virus, or the people who, well, this business shouldn't work and it's blowing up. Why are we not looking at them like, hey, what are they doing right? What are they doing? You know, do they have a morning routine? Mm-hmm. You know, what's their wife? What's their house look like? You know, how does that all play in? Because every aspect of your life plays into everything else. You can't compartmentalize. Everybody's like, well, I can compartmentalize it. No, you can't. No. And anybody who tells you can, you know, make sure you take a step back from them because, you know, how do I want to say this? They are a legend in their own mind.
What I find interesting, and it's this culture now where, you know, it's okay to say that, you know, other people had certain advantages and privileges. And because I didn't have those advantages and privileges, that's why I didn't improve. Now, I didn't have any advantages except my color. Growing up in Baltimore, even though I grew up in the minority and got beaten by, you know, black cops and Asian cops and Latino cops. I mean, I grew up in the minority. But again, when you grow up poor, guess what? You know, you have to say, okay, what do I have to do? Well, I had to get scholarships to college. I got academic scholarships. What can I do? Or I take loans out. I worked three jobs. I did what it took to make it work. I wasn't handed anything.
No.
I looked at it and said, what can I do? What is wrong with my sports performance? Okay, I'm on a shitty team. This team is terrible. But if I'm the best player I can be, then that's going to raise the level of the team.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh, I'm at the worst team, I'm just going to collect my paycheck like some pros do. Why
Right.
don't you just turn it around? And you saw that in a couple teams like 10 years ago with the Golden State Warriors. Remember them? They
Oh,
were the
man.
worst
Yeah.
team in
Oh, yeah.
basketball. They were terrible. And you start saying, no, you don't got to get rid of that culture. And that's like the social, they call that social psychological aspect of sports psychology, where how do you change the culture of the team? Like how, if you have a home life that's not going good, all right, you're the man of the house, you're the woman of the house. What do you have to do to change that culture? Or like you say, if it's a losing team, then leave.
Right.
Don't sit there and complain about it. Either improve it or move to a different team. And that's harsh because some people, they want their label being a loser. Oh, we never win a game. And I'm like,
Right.
well, with attitude, you're never going to win. You're
Right.
never going to do well. Why aren't you trying to do those things to make you the best you can be, to change the culture of your house, of your neighborhood, of your city, of your school?
Right. So, I mean, you can go about that one of two ways. So I always say, if you're the best athlete on the team and you brought that up and you really keep pushing yourself harder, start trying to bring some a few people with you. So, like try and find some of the other top guys, be like, hey man, let's go. You can come work out with me this week. You're coming with me. Hey, what are you doing? No, come on, we're going doing this. And you start building that camaraderie. Now, if you're not the top athlete, you have a goal set. Start trying to outwork the top athlete. Push him. Because if everybody's like, are you seeing him? He's almost catching up to Fred. Look at that. He's about lifted as much as Fred. Are you going to sit there on your, if you're the top athlete, you're going to sit there and be like, oh, well, he's going to catch me and pass me. Oh, no. You'll start grinding. Well, the second you see that kind of competitiveness and that camaraderie, and you start bringing some people with you. I mean, there's people who can bring you down, but if you're up higher, don't be afraid to try and bring people up with you. But don't give them forever. Either you come with them or not. They don't want to come with you. Grab someone else to go with you. But don't sit there and try and work on the same guy for 6 months and have him blow workouts or, half-ass it. He won't get off his phone. Like, if he doesn't want to roll, find someone else who will roll with you and who's going to push the team. And, you won't get everybody to go with you. But if you can get the majority of guys headed in the right direction, you're going to have a different team on your hands in a short amount of time. But a lot of people get focused on, I got to get him right. No, if he doesn't want to do what he wants to do, grab someone else and let's go. Find the people around you who are willing to improve and are willing to take that challenge and pull the rope with you. And don't worry. And I hate to say it, but cut out the people who won't.
I think that's a big one. What some of my mentors had told me, and we were talking about burning bridges of relationships, and say, oh, so you never burn a bridge? And he goes, oh no, I burn them all the time. I go, what? And he
Yeah.
goes, if you got a relationship that's not working, take a sword to it. And I'm like, what? He goes, you cut it. And I go, why would you do that? Because they're going to pull you back. They're anchors. And I said, it's okay to have someone who's not moving as fast as you. But if they're trying and they're trying to keep up with you, that's great. They're going to hold you up. It's okay. You can block for that running back. But if they're not going to block and you just go through the motions, everyone's going to get killed.
Right.
Everyone's going to get killed. And that's part of our culture. And that's one thing, I've noticed is, and I want to kind of talk on this toward the end here is, even like some, helicopter parents who like vicariously live through their kids. Oh, my kid's a soccer star, a football star. I said, you're not helping them because you should be working on yourself.
Right.
And I don't care if you're a stamp collector or a coin collector or whatever you do as a hobby, be the best you can be. So that kid who's the big soccer star, oh yeah, you know, I'm doing good. And my dad's mom's there every time, but you know, she's the best at whatever she's doing. She's the best church lady. She runs, you know, this festival at church and she does this. She's always involved. Because in a team, you lift each other up and you're proud of the accomplishments of all the people, even the special teams players, even the third string. You go, you know what? That was a great tackle you made that 2 games ago when you got in the game. Thank you, because that would have been a touchdown. And by everyone being successful, everyone pushing to be their best, that changes the whole culture. And that's one thing, you know, I see, and we can keep using the Tom Brady thing. In New England, you know, they talk about the New England Patriots system. What is the system? It's not a system, it's a culture.
Right.
When you come in there, you're expected to do your best, be on time, don't be late, be focused and bust your ass and encourage one another. Now, we would think that would be simple, but I mean, I can't imagine trying to do that with 55, you know, adults at all times, you know?
Right. You know, I'm going to go back a little bit to what you said and unpack something. For like a parent and a kid, you want that kid to be able to brag about much as their parent as what the parent brags about the kid.
Oh, wow. That's good. Yeah.
And for teammates, you want the same thing. You want them sitting there and be like, oh, I can do this. Be like, man, did you see the block he did? Did you see that guy's catch? If you're so busy spending more time talking about your teammates, your parents, than what they are saying themselves, and it's not, you know, it takes away from the eye and it really builds, because everybody's like, hey, man, like, you know, as a parent, if like my mom's a vet, and I'm not going to lie, I brag about her and she's, you know, it's got back to her and she's like, you know, every time I've heard people say things like, oh yeah, your son was talking you up. She goes, it makes me work a little harder at my job. It makes me a little more prouder. And you know, there's nothing wrong with bragging your parents up, but you also want to be a parent or a kid that your parent, that your family wants to talk about, you know, not that you're that, hey man, did you hear that? No, it's not competition with your siblings either. Hey, mom talked to you about me more than she did you. No. But you want to be the person who does their best, and their best, you know, allows their parents to be like, hey, yeah, my son, he just rocked an ACT. He dropped a 32, you know, stuff like that. And that doesn't just come instantly. That's not just, oh, it was given to me. That comes with a grind, because the harder you grind, the more people recognize your accomplishment. And you get more reward for the grind and the time put in to reach that accomplishment than you will ever get for somebody given to you. Someone gets you a Lamborghini, you're like, yeah, I won this. Oh, cool, that's great. But if you're like, no, I've been working 3 jobs, I've been putting it away, you know, I bought this car. Trust me, your story will carry a lot more weight. And what you have to say carries a lot more weight. How you did it and the journey you took, you know, even if it's a big reward, will carry way more weight than anything else. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I think that's one thing we really have in push in our society. I mean, I got 4 teenage girls in the same high school, and the idea of the process and doing excellence, as you talked about, you're not going to get perfection. We're human. We're going to fall. But if you're working for excellence, being the best you can be every day in every subject, with all your homework, with all your assignments, then eventually you're going to get the grades you deserve. You know, and sometimes I'll hear my kids, and they're just normal teenagers. They're like, oh, I don't want to do the work here. I don't want to do this. Or the one that gets me is the teacher doesn't like me, you know, and that one gets me. And I'm like, okay, that may be true. Maybe the coach doesn't like you, but you can still perform. You know, right. There's been many, many coaches that hated the player, but the player still scored touchdowns and was a good teammate, had good sportsmanship. And that's what you have to do. You may not agree with the personalities, but what does personality have to do with success? Right. Nothing. You know, if you're banging heads because, oh, you know, this one likes country and this one likes rock and roll, who cares? Can you win? You have to come up with a formula in life for winning. And it's different for every player.
Right. Along those lines, you know, coach doesn't like you. Your boss doesn't like you. Here's a strategy. Make yourself so invaluable. Ooh. They have no choice. Make yourself, raise your level to your game, your business thing, to a level, the boss has no choice but to promote you, to put you in that meeting, to lead that program. He has no choice but to put you in that running back spot, to put you in the linebacker spot, because your performance speaks for itself. And even if you don't like the person, a good coach and a good boss, even if they don't always like you, will put in their top players when the game is on the line.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and you hear it all the time. I hear it in my clinic working with patients. You know, like, chiropractors are basically bartenders without alcohol, you know, but, you know, they're constantly saying, well, I don't want to put in the extra work because, you know, I don't like my boss. I don't like that. And it's like, that's when you work harder. I mean, I always call it, you know, I like to say it's the pride bomb, the love bomb. I'm like, what do you mean? I said, I will get so much accolades by my coworkers by I'll come in early, leave late, do the extra thing, do the extra assignment, take the hardest job, and bust my butt to the point when I come home, I'm laying on the couch and I fall asleep there. I'll do that because if I don't like my boss, I'm not going to sit there and complain. I'm going to make them look like an idiot when they say, oh, Fred's a bad employee. And everyone's going to look at him and saying, you're nuts. I'm calling the owner, you know?
Right. Exactly.
You know, and how many coaches have lost their job because they don't get along with the top players? And that front office will say, you know what? We may have a winning team, but the only reason we're winning is these three players and they don't get along with you. And guess what? You're gone. So even if you think that, oh, I have no options, my boss doesn't like me, I put in the extra time. You put in the extra time, and then I'll have people, and my kids will tell me, like, well, that means nothing. I was like, well, wait a minute. You know you did the work. Your God knows you did the work, and maybe your coworkers and people around see it, but the main thing is your pride. If you can look in that mirror every day and say, I'm the best employee, the best student, the best spouse, the best partner, the best lover, the best friend, the best neighbor I can be, then that's all you need. If you can't look in the mirror and say that, then you need to get back to the drawing board and get back to practice.
Oh yeah. And along with sports psychology, you can never be complacent. There's always someone to try and take your title on the best. Yeah. There, you know, you can't sit back, Mac, I'm the best. You know, everybody calls me the best. Oh no, get to the grind, man, because there's somebody coming at you working harder. You know, they're coming for your title. And it, you know, that constant, you know, you may be the best in that constant grind. You'll shoot up a corporate ladder. Your business will grow so fast, you won't even know what to do with yourself. Yeah, you might be exhausted at night, but trust me, it'll pay dividends faster than taking the slow, scenic route of like, well, I'm slowly doing what everybody else is doing. Oh, no, stand out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put the grind in, man.
I totally agree. And so, you know, let's finish it up with this, Dr. Luke. Our culture has changed where the kids now don't want to put the grind in. When someone gets elected, they want to go around and scream and complain. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but they're not working for positive change because it takes work. It's almost like whining and complaining and gossiping has become a virtue. And we know through human history that whining, complaining, and gossiping has never, ever led to successful anything. You right. know, we have like 3,000 years of written history, maybe 3,500, if you go back to the Babylonians, and that's never worked yet for human civilization. I don't know why they would think it would work in the next last 4 or 5 years. So my question to you is, how do we take the concepts of sports performance in excellence and make these changes?
I mean, first you got to quit focusing on the problem because of course, but it's easy though. You can sit on your couch and be like, well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. But when it comes to solutions, it requires work. It requires you getting off your couch. It requires communication on both sides, left and right. I don't care what side of the fence you're on, but you have to be able to communicate and get problem solving. In order to solve problems, you have to be like, okay, here's the issue, and not be like, well, this is the issue and it's your fault. It's your fault. Like, no. You got to focus on how do we come together to bring this team together to get to the goal that we want to go to and solve the problem. But right now we're so focused on well, calling people out because this is the problem, or you're the problem, or you're this, you're that. We're so busy on name calling and identifying how detailed these problems are. If we'd spent near as much time working on detailing possible solutions, possible scenarios for solutions, how to bring people to it would be a much better off. But right now, but that requires work. And for some reason, we don't want to do the work anymore. And every time you have societies that have no longer want to do the work anymore, those societies don't last long.
That's true. That's very true. So, well, this has been fantastic, Dr. Luke. We'll have to do this again and again.
Oh, I hope so. This is great. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate your time tonight, and I hope everyone got something from it that, we're trying to take the lessons that come from, elite high performance athletics, apply them to everyday life. If you're a single mom listening to this, a single dad, if you're having trouble in your marriage or you just want a better career, maybe start studying. You may hate sports. I know I have a lot of patients that are like, I don't watch sports. And I'm like, okay, but you can take those concepts of goal setting
Oh,
and
yeah.
honest feedback. Hey, you screwed up here. Let's find ways to improve it. And then practice, practice, practice better behavior, better outcomes. And that's the whole point of sports. And keep the confidence. The confidence is based on your work ethic, not something artificial that's been handed to you. Like I was watching the series yesterday, and unfortunately, I was sitting there and I'm like, okay, these are little snippets. I'm gonna watch 3 hours and watch the entire series of called Marching Orders. And it's about a marching band in a traditionally black college in Miami, Orlando, Daytona Beach, Florida, that their drive and their success, and oh my goodness, what these kids have to do besides schoolwork, 4, 5, 6 hours of practice a day. And I'm like, oh my goodness, no wonder they look great on the field. And how they focused on just solutions constantly. They weren't whining, and they showed the whiners, but guess what? The whiners and complainers didn't last. And you could see the
No.
culture didn't support that kind of complaining and whining and protesting. Instead of saying, nope, be better, be so good that we win and we have that kind of respect. And I was blown away. I'm like, oh my God, I have to watch this again. Because these 18, 19, and 20-year-olds are teaching me that, when I get up and I'm tired and oh, I got to see all these patients and, oh, who do I got to bring to what? I got to bring another girl shopping for what? And I'm sitting there complaining in my head instead of, Fred, if you want to be the best dad, you can be the best chiropractor, you need to buck it up and just get through this day. And
Right.
do the best you can. And the amazing thing is when you put in your best effort, you feel good about it, even if you're exhausted. And the next day you're energized because you did well.
Right. Yeah, that when it comes to goal setting, you can set daily goals, weekly goals, monthly goals. And if you're having a bad day and you're struggling getting through it, stop for 5, 10 minutes and set goals for the rest of the day. And they don't have to be huge, but set those goals. And that will help you focus and keep progressing through the rest of the day, where you don't sit on the couch and be like, man, I didn't get anything done. Well, if you set those goals before you got to your couch, you're like, okay, I got A, B, and C done. You feel accomplished. And now that sense of energy rolls into the next day.
Absolutely. Well, all right. Well, we're going to sign off here, and I hope everyone listening got something, and thanks for being with us, Doc.
Oh, it was great. Look forward to another one.
All right.